RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast. Happy Veterans Day. It is November 11th, 2020, and we are here to talk about the latest and greatest going on in the world of mixed martial arts. We're going to start off the program by talking about the top headlines in MMA over the last week. Also, we are going to preview this week's MMA. Of course, on Thursday, you got Bellator 253. And then on Saturday, you got UFC Vegas number 14. If you're looking to take in other MMA this week, the XFC returns here tonight on Wednesday night. You got some notable names on that fight card. And so you got UFC vets and Andre Sukhothov's on that card. Kurt Hollibutt's on that card. So a nice card there on the NBC Sports Network. But Daniel, it's Veterans Day. It is, as I sit here in Tampa, I am just waiting for a hurricane to make its appearance here in the Tampa Bay area. And I know you woke up this morning to the thing we all hate to wake up to. That's no internet in the house.
Yeah, we had no internet in the house. We had apparently we had an accident where one car swerved off the road because another car was in its way and the car hit the road. Hit the pole, excuse me. I was informed that no one was in serious danger, so the only damage was to the internet. But yeah, we had no internet most of the day, and truly, it shows you how reliant we are on technology, on the internet, when you don't have something for 4 to 5 hours, and it feels like the end of the world. But regardless, gotta go outside, get some fresh air, drink a cup of coffee, and then get back in here and talk mixed martial arts with you. So it's a little weird, Jason. It makes you appreciate the internet, but you know, there are bigger challenges in the world, and unfortunately, we're here to talk about all types of face punching.
Yeah, I'll tell you, earlier this year, I had my internet was out of my house for like 3 days, and like you didn't know what to do with yourself. I think we kind of forget about these things that we take for granted. Internet is definitely one of them. But you know, Daniel, if you had told me on Sunday, okay, we're going to kick off this week's podcast by talking about, you know, the top headlines in MMA, it would have been clear to me my number one headline would be Glover Teixeira. However, that's not the number one headline right now in mixed martial arts. That's because of the news that came down yesterday. As I remember, was sitting here in my office, and you know, one of my screens, I have TweetDeck up, so I'm, you know, constantly seeing, you know, Twitter. Even though I have to be honest, for the past couple of days, I kind of had to not really look at my Twitter timeline because it was just filled with so much political stuff that I just didn't want to see. I didn't care. I just want, like, give me what I go to Twitter for sports information. But you know, I see a tweet from Damon Martin that says Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier 2 is official for January 23rd. And my first thought was like, man, did I just miss something? I didn't notice a UFC announcement on this thing. And then, I click the article. I read the article and I read it. And I'm just like, it's pretty much a piece where Damon Martin's writing how this fight is basically in the works. It's agreed upon. You know, nothing I would classify as official. And then, of course, Dana White comes out and basically pumps the brakes on everything, saying it's not official. And then, of course, magically, the MMA fighting headline has changed, just now saying it's in the works, you know, which is kind of just like, oh, man, I kind of felt probably bad for Dana Martin, because I'm guessing he's probably not the one that wrote the headline, probably someone else. So it's kind of egg on Dana Martin's face. But obviously, it's a fight that, you know, we expect to happen, you know, January 23rd. Dana White kind of hinted at potentially the fight is going to take place on Fight Island. And obviously I know Ireland basically is going to be shut down for the next month. So, and Conor did want this fight to happen in December. That's not going to happen. It's going to be, you know, all signs point to January 23rd. And Daniel, I think the end of the day for me on this story is that we are getting a fight that gets us excited to sit in front of our television set on Saturday night, because with, you know, what we have right now from the UFC, we have a lot of fights, but we necessarily don't have a lot of fights that make us go, okay, that is a fight that we want to, you know, sit down on our couch on Saturday night. No matter what else is going on in the world, we're sitting on the couch to watch a fight. And when January 23rd gets here, saying the fight happens on January 23rd, I know where I'll be.
Yeah, definitely. Anytime Conor McGregor fights, it immediately becomes the headline. Anytime a fight is announced or he's in trouble, it's the biggest story we talk about. You know, he only fights anywhere from 1 to 3 times a year. We've got 52 weeks in a given year, and I guarantee you 15 to 20 of those weeks, the top headline is Conor McGregor. That's because he's the biggest star in the history of the sport. You know, we talk a lot about hyperboles, but for Conor, that one is true thus far. He has been the grade A draw among all the draws that we've had. So anytime he fights, it's a big deal. I mean, for the foreseeable future, every time there's a Conor fight, no matter who his opponent is, it's going to be the biggest business the UFC does. Just because Conor's really transcended into that apex superstar status that literally no other fighter has done. He's become a cult figure, which is very, very difficult to do. He's been a part of culture. And anyways, this is a very exciting fight. Obviously, it's not official. I mean, making big money fights like this, big time fights like this, is a lot like pulling teeth. Anytime you're trying to book Conor or John Jones, and maybe at this point, Israel Adesanya, you're trying to book these big time stars, it's going to be difficult to do so. There's so many different factors to make it official. So we're assuming this fight's going to happen. To me, when I think of this fight, I think it's a fantastic fight from an action standpoint. I mean, Dustin Poirier has never had a boring fight, man. He's so excited, and obviously Conor loves to have exciting contests as well when the opportunity is right. So I would expect an exciting scrap, and I guess the only shock to me is when you look at this fight booked in the framework of COVID-19 and coronavirus, I think it's pretty clear this fight, as you mentioned, is probably going to happen in Fight Island, and it's pretty clear that this fight's going to happen with no fans, potentially limited capacity. That's a possibility. But in all likelihood, it's going to be no fans. And it's just, to me, it's surprising to see Conor McGregor in that environment. You know, everyone else, not so much, but Conor's the one fighter that it's surprising for him to make that walk to the cage and to compete in the prime of his career in front of virtually, you know, an Ultimate Fighter audience. That, to me, is the most interesting thing. But I mean, I think when you look at COVID-19, when you look at coronavirus, Anthony Fauci said something about possibly a vaccine in April with the Pfizer, I believe is what I read. And you're talking about, you know, not everyone's going to get it right away. It's going to be certain groups of people like medical workers and stuff like that. So it's going to be a long time until everyone gets the vaccine. And I think by January, I don't think the UFC will be running shows of crowds. So that, to me, is one of the more interesting notes of this, is we're probably going to see Conor McGregor go out there and compete with nobody in attendance.
It's interesting to me just because of, if you are the UFC, and Dana White, what I found really interesting about what he has said, you know, throughout this kind of, you know, this period that we're in, he goes, look, I'm not going to do fans with limited attendance, you know, because, I mean, look, he could bring that fight to the United States. He could bring it to, you know, look, my home state of Florida, they're accepting fans. Your home state of Texas is accepting fans. You know, we've seen it, you know, across the National Football League of what states are allowing limited capacity. You know, here in Florida, the number's either 20 or 25% of what you can have in attendance. But I mean, look, Conor McGregor is big business, and you know, I mean, how much of this is ultimately maybe the executives at ESPN looking at Dana going, look, we need to have a Conor McGregor fight. But here's also the other part of that, Daniel, is the fact of another example of why you never believe retirements in MMA.
Yeah. Was Conor supposed to be retired? What time was this that he got retired? What was it, Jason?
3, 4? I mean, we got to be at least 3 at this point.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Conor more so than anyone. You don't believe he's retired. I mean, this guy is going to go out on a shield. I mean, even him, I mean, we saw the headline where DC jokingly said he thought about taking on Jan Blachowicz for about 15 minutes, then he realized, I'm done. But you don't believe retirements. But Dana White and Conor, I mean, you talk about Dana saying he wouldn't do limited attendance and stuff like that. That's probably true, but Dana's not one to, you know, stay to his word, right? Like, he's willing to adjust. So both Dana and Conor, anything that you say, it's the perfect cliche, take it with a grain of salt, because it's not solid. Both these men have a history of going against something they've already said.
When Conor announced that retirement, I don't think anyone really believed that he truly is going to retire. I mean, look, it's a negotiating ploy between Conor McGregor. And look, it's Conor's the one guy that, I mean, he has leverage on the UFC because of the amount of money that he brings in from a pay-per-view revenue aspect. I mean, obviously, they lose a ton of money, you know, in terms of a live gate. You know, if this fight was, say, in Vegas or anywhere else in the country, I mean, you're probably talking about, you know, 10, 15, you know, plus million-dollar gate. So obviously they're missing that aspect of it. But I mean, look, when Conor steps into the cage, it's going to give us all excited. And it's a great fight. And, you know, I think when you talk about the kind of storylines in related to this, I saw yesterday Ali Abdelaziz, of course, the manager of Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, just tweeted 30-0. So it kind of makes you believe that. And Dana had made some comments recently that made you believe that the retirement of Khabib maybe was not exactly, you know, set in stone. So we'll see what happens there. And I mean, look, we've got a division that is very exciting, and, you know, obviously a division that's going to, you know, is going to go interchange, you know, whenever Khabib Nurmagomedov does retire. And that can kind of transition into, you know, our second biggest headline of the week. And that's got to be Glover Teixeira, as, you know, he definitely made his case for a light heavyweight title shot on Saturday night. Had a weather adversity right early on in that fight, getting dropped. He able to survive, and then has a dominating, you know, remainder of the first round, dominating second round, then gets dropped in the third round, but ultimately survives that, gets a submission. And as that fight ends, Dale, I'm just sitting here going, like, man, I wasn't really all in on Jan Blachowicz versus Israel Adesanya. I just, like, to me, if you tell me Izzy is going up to 205 pounds, to me, there's only one fight that truly interests me in terms of, like, okay, I got to be there on Saturday night. I mean, look, and Izzy is must-watch television, but if he's going to 205 pounds, it's to fight Jon Jones. That's the fight that I want to see. So, like, and even when you listen to Dana White's comments following the fight card last Saturday night, it almost seems like maybe he's kind of thinking, okay, maybe we don't need to go the Izzy route. Maybe we need to go the Glover Teixeira route. And to me, like, that's the route I think the UFC should go. You know, you can all, Izzy can move up to 200 to 205 pounds whenever. I just think do the Glover Jan fight, and then, you know, see what happens with Izzy. I mean, obviously the Robert Whittaker fight, I think Dana, you know, I was listening to somebody else kind of talk about this, and they're like, it's like the UFC really never picked up the phone and called Robert Whittaker. Dana just made these assumptions based on what he said in the press conference. And if you listen to what Robert Whittaker said in that press conference, he's just like, look, I have a baby due in January. I'm not going to fight till after that is done. So, you know, to me, I think the UFC should do Glover Teixeira versus Jan Blachowicz next. But I mean, look, it doesn't, all at the end of the day, it does not matter what we think. It matters what the UFC wants to do. But I definitely got the sense from Dana White that maybe he's reconsidering what he's going to do for Jan Blachowicz's first title defense.
Yeah, I mean, poor Glover Teixeira doesn't have much time to wait, right? He asked for the title shot in such a nice and pleasant way. He's gone on an incredible run this late in his career. I mean, this is not something I expected out of him. I thought we had already seen the peak with the last time he was able to rise up the light heavyweight mountain. I thought after that, it's okay. You know, Glover's up there in age. He's had his run. No, this is the run for Glover Teixeira. And he's put himself in a position to take on a champion that he can absolutely beat. This isn't Jon Jones that he's going up against. Jan Blachowicz looks amazing. His hands are dynamite. And look, Glover got dropped a couple of times. There's a chance that if Jan lands the same strikes that Santos does, Teixeira doesn't get back up. So it's a compelling fight, but Teixeira could absolutely find himself the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world in 2021. And that's an amazing statement for him and his family. So that main event was great. I loved how back and forth it was. When you saw it, you thought, man, Thiago Santos did perform well. He got tired, for sure. And that, to me, played a major role in him losing this fight. But he performed really well with his stand-up, putting Glover in major trouble multiple times in this fight. The difference of this fight was Glover's ability to get rocked, recover, and take the fight down to the ground, ultimately getting that rear naked choke. So Teixeira, incredibly tough. One of these fighters who's very, 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 very good at the grappling, at the top control, in addition to solid stand-up, just not so much against guys like Santos or potentially Blachowicz. So look, I think clearly Adesanya versus Jan is a bigger money fight than Jan versus Glover. But I think Whittaker versus Israel is a bigger money fight than Israel versus Jan. So I would probably go Israel versus Whittaker, Jan versus Glover, And whenever Israel moves up to 205, I think you hit the nail on the head. The opponent I want to see him fight is John Jones. I think if you're the UFC, the motivation should be money and promoting good fights. And I think if you're doing that, I think the answer is Whitaker Adesanya, Jan Glover, with the idea of Israel facing John Jones down the line. For Adesanya, I understand the motivation to compete for the light heavyweight championship, right? You've already beat Robert Whittaker. You're already the middleweight champion. Which fight is more appetizing? The fight where you take on Whittaker, again, just to defend your title, or the fight where you take on Jan to win a second championship? So the one guy who I think is probably the most in favor of Israel getting that title shot is Israel Adesanya. There's a lot of motivation, self-interest to get that fight. Personally, as a mixed martial arts fan, and as just a human being who feels for Glover, I'm going to see Teixeira get the title shot. The man has worked his butt off. And again, he's approaching, you know, the mid-40s. Let's get this man in the octagon. Let's get him a challenge for a light heavyweight title.
I don't have a big appetite for Adesanya Blachowicz right now, but I think it's also maybe tells you a little bit about kind of where the UFC is at. At 185 pounds, you mentioned about how Glover versus Santos was a fun fight. Of course, I was following a less than exciting matchup between Arlovski and Tanner Boser. But I mean, look, I think, you know, I didn't really write this one down, but I think if you're kind of correlating off what we saw Saturday night, I think that the second biggest notable item to come out of UFC Vegas number 13 is Hany Barcelos. Had a great matchup, looked absolutely amazing. You know, a guy that at 135 pounds, you got to be, you know, looking out for. You know, Giacaze had a nice, you know, finish in that fight. But to me, it really comes down to, you know, Hany Barcelos to me is the second biggest story. And if I was going to add a third, you know, maybe you look at someone like Alexander Romanov, a guy at heavyweight that obviously you got his grappling ability. So, you know, I think there's you see that fight and maybe you kind of have some concerns when he fights a striker. And but to me, I mean, Hany Barcelos has got to be the other guy that everyone's got to be paying attention to following UFC Vegas 13.
Yeah, he looks really good, and he took that fight on short notice, too. And when you see these guys taking those fights on short notice and performing that well, you really got to give him extra kudos. For Barcelos, it's pretty simple. This guy needs a much more important, bigger matchup at 135 pounds. That's what he deserves coming off that win. That Arlovski fight sucked. I swear to God. There's like 10 Andrei Arlovski UFC fights that are just the worst. Like, if you need a cure for insomnia, let me get you the Andrei Arlovski top 10 worst fights list, and you will fall asleep. Like this dude, all the respect to him. Like, our man was out there competing for the heavyweight championship against Tim Sylvia, and he's still out here co-main eventing UFCs. All the respect to the Pitbull, but damn, some of his fights are just not pleasant. Yeah, that Romanov knockout, I mean, well, it was a knockout, right? Because he choked him out. But that forearm choke, that almost, I was watching that against De Lima. I was like, man, that just shouldn't even be legal. Like, that just feels like he's crushing his artery. But that guy, Romanov, oh my gosh, what a heavyweight monster. Just on top of you, putting his forearm on your whatever the heck your throat is. I don't know the scientific term. I'm an idiot. But choking, crushing that deal. Oh my gosh, so impressive. The other story I would say is it looks like we're potentially getting set up for a really important fight for the Asian market, and that's potentially Zhang Weili going up against Yan Zainan at women's strawweight, as Zainan outstruck Claudia Gadelha, winning rounds 2 and 3. Just phenomenal, phenomenal jab out of Yan. She took on a very tough Claudia Gadelha, and she clearly won rounds 2 and 3. I think this is a fighter who, if her next fight isn't for the strawweight championship, she's one fight away. And the idea of having two fighters, China, going up against each other for a UFC championship, that's a very, very fun idea for that country. A very, very huge country. And I think if the UFC is able to communicate that idea to that country clearly, that could really generate some dinero for the UFC.
That is an absolute great point that you bring up. I mean, yeah, Yan Zainan looked excellent in that fight. And, you know, probably would imagine, you know, probably another win away from a title shot at all. You know, it all does kind of point to that the UFC is going to do Zhang Wei Li versus Rose Namajunas, but Zhang An puts herself right there in line. And of course, the UFC train does roll on. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Top headline number three this week is Kayla Harrison. She is going to fight at Invicta FC 43 next week, November the 20th. She is going to be taking on Courtney King. I guess, you know, the two interesting notes about this is, A, she is still under contract with PFL. PFL is allowing her to take the fight, so that's a part of this story. The other part of this story is the fact that she's going down to 145 pounds, and if people have been following this story over the past couple of weeks, you know, there was, you know, talk of Kayla Harrison, Lance Palmer. They had hired an attorney, you know, basically essentially saying, like, you know, going after PFL for not allowing the fight. Apparently, according to the story on ESPN, it just because she's having this fight, it's not really ending that legal battle. So we'll see what's going to happen there. You know, kind of the rumblings was that PFL allowing fighters to take fights as long as it's not in the UFC or PFL. But I mean, look, I think it's obviously it's a huge story that they're, you know, PFL is allowing her to compete in Invicta. But Daniel, I think the biggest part of this story is Kayla Harrison is going to cut down 145 pounds. That's massive news because all of a sudden, whenever she becomes a free agent, she's fighting 145 pounds. Yes, she trains at ATT along with Amanda Nunes, so I don't know whether they would fight each other or not. But boy, if I am Bellator, I see this news, I'm going, oh man, we're dying for legit challengers for Chris Cyborg. If Kayla Harrison becomes available, if I'm Bellator, all sights are set on signing Kayla Harrison.
Yeah, man, you are right. That is the biggest news, the featherweight fight. The fact that she's fighting on Invicta, it makes sense. I mean, Kayla is literally the straw that stirs the drink in the PFL. And it's interesting that she's, you know, if you're the PFL, you don't want her, you and her to be fighting legally. And that's not a great sign. But I also think she's someone who has a lot of leverage, and the ability to fight outside of PFL during a pandemic seems like a reasonable possibility for their biggest star. She's like, listen, I'm the GOAT for your promotion. I'm going to go fight in Invicta. I need to fight. So it seems like she spent this pandemic time really, really training hard and getting the weight down. So moving down to 145 is huge, because moving down to 145 puts her in a landscape where she can actually fight interesting fights. She can actually fight fights that people care about. Kayla Harrison fighting a lightweight, unfortunately, in 2020 doesn't really mean too much. Kayla Harrison fighting at 145 does. Kayla Harrison fighting Cyborg does. Fighting Amanda Nunes does. And what's interesting is, even in spite of the fact that they're teammates, it's interesting that the first thought that comes to my mind when it comes to Harrison at 145 isn't the Nunes fight. Even though Nunes is clearly the best 145er in the world, the best female fighter of all time, it's quite interesting that the fight I'm thinking of is Harrison versus Cyborg. I don't know if there's just something there with that dynamic, or if it's because we've thought about that fight for a very, very long time, because Chris Cyborg has been the queen at 145 for such a long time, and Kayla represented the first real legitimate challenge for her down the line at that weight class before the idea of Amanda Nunes moving up became a reality. That could be a reason why. But regardless, the appetizing fight I want to watch is Kayla versus Cyborg. I just think that's a great fight. Potentially also because Cyborg's a little, you know, been fighting for a very long time, still really talented, still one of the best in the world, but Kayla can meet her on the way out. So that could be another reason why. But for Harrison, I mean, it's imperative for her to get out of her PFL deal if she's able to make 145. I know the money's good in the PFL, but Kayla's the type of fighter who has the ability with the UFC platform, not even a Bellator platform, but a UFC platform, to make serious money. Serious, serious, serious money. I think if she goes to the UFC, and if Amanda Nunes vacates the title, because I don't think she's beating Amanda Nunes, I'm safely feeling confident she won't beat Amanda. But if she goes to the UFC, she wins the featherweight championship, and she has the UFC hype train behind her, she can immediately become one of the biggest stars in mixed martial arts, and that means a lot of money in her pocket.
No doubt. I mean, look, I think, like, when I think of Kayla Harrison, I mean, obviously, all athletes want to make the most money they possibly can, but I really believe, because of, obviously, her pedigree in terms of what she has done, to me, I think she wants to fight the best in the world. And like, if I'm Bellator, Chris Cyborg, that's a fight that I want to make happen. But you mentioned about Amanda Nunes, and you know, she did make news this week as she is pulled out of her fight due to undisclosed reasons, according to Brett Okamoto of ESPN.com. And Megan Anderson tweeted about it, saying, "Wishing Amanda a speedy recovery. UFC is rescheduling about for a date early next year. The goal remains the same. We will be ready." Of course, that was going to be one of two title fights on that December card, Sterling and Jan being the other one. So, you know, wish whatever reason Amanda Nunes, send her to the healing vibes out there. But that is Amanda Nunes being out of UFC 256 is headline number four for over the last week.
Yeah, man, it's headline number four, mainly because it just came out of nowhere, the rapid rate of fights getting canceled, right? We had, obviously, we have our main event is different this weekend. And then, like, within the 24 hours, boom, Nunes is out. And I think it makes sense that we're seeing Nunes return with the Anderson fight instead of booking Anderson for someone else, because, again, Nunes is what makes Anderson relevant, right? Anderson versus whoever isn't a co-main event fight. It's just a random top featherweight fight. So it makes sense to postpone it. The undisclosed reasons is interesting. It could be anything, and we won't speculate because we don't know. But, you know, it's a bit sad because, again, Nunes is the GOAT, the best of all time. And anytime we got to push back on a fight date, it gets a bit sad. But this is a fight where, you know, it's one of those fights where if Nunes wins, it's like business as usual. And if Nunes loses, I don't think anyone's going to be like, and it's unfortunate, no one's going to be like, "Man, Megan Anderson's really the best of all time now." No, everyone's going to be like, "Well, Nunes passed her prime, and that's okay. She lost this fight because she climbed the mountain and she's on her way down." It's like unfortunate for Anderson because, you know, it's going to take someone who's just a special talent to beat Amanda and to get all of her, like, momentum that she has to be like, now she's the GOAT. She's the best ever. And that's probably not where Anderson is at. But it's unfortunate. But you know what? That Jan Sterling fight, from my point of view, I mean, I'm hyped. I just need that one and I'll be okay.
Yeah, that Jan Sterling fight is definitely the fight that does intrigue us the most. But those are the top four headlines of the week. Let's before we get to you know, previewing this week's MMA, of course, we got Bellator on Thursday and the UFC on Saturday. I want to mention these quotes I saw on MMAJunkie.com as I believe it was Nolan King had a chance to sit down and talk to Bellator president Scott Coker, and some interesting quotes here from the president of Bellator. He was asked about Corey Anderson's Bellator debut. He says, quote, "Listen, I thought he did a great job. I thought he did exactly what he was supposed to do. I don't think he'll get the shot next, but I think maybe one more fight and we'll put him right in there with the champ, whoever the champ is at that time. He's somebody who adds great depth to our roster at 205 pounds. That's why I've always said we have the best light heavyweight division on the planet. He's a major part of why we can say that." And then, of course, he's asked about the champion, Vadim Nemkov, and the potential of Vadim Nemkov versus Phil Davis. And this is what Scott Coker said. He goes, "Phil Davis had a great fight with Nemkov last time. This will be a rematch. Phil has done a great job since then. This was a close fight. I'm not sure if you recall. I think it was in Israel last year, and they had a war there. Phil just came off a great win against Machida. I think Phil should be next in line." So, Daniel, that's, to me, a very interesting, because I just expected that following Corey Anderson's win last week, he would get Vadim Nemkov, but Scott Coker threw us a little curveball there.
Yeah, he did, man. He's being patient with poor Corey. I mean, maybe it's the wrestling. Maybe he's just like, man, this guy's just out here wrestling, and he's going to take the... Corey Anderson's never taken the expressway in his light heavyweight climb in any organization, and I think it's mostly because of the fight style. It's mostly because of that, but Scott Coker's being patient, but he's still hyping him up, and I think Corey understands that as well. So, look, man, at the end of the day, Corey Anderson went out there, and he fought Melvin Manhoef. That's not the best light heavyweight division in the world, Scott. I hate to break it to you, Scotty, but Scotty Doesn't Know is a song that could have been written about Scott Coker not knowing, like, where the best fighters are. Because they're not in Bellator. Bellator's great, but Bellator does not have the best light heavyweight division. Bellator does not have the best bantamweight division. Stop saying a bunch of crap. Anyways, that was that one just got me riled up. I got distracted by that, but for Corey, it's not like he's entitled to a title shot. He's got to go out there and win a couple fights, especially when they have a legitimate challenge for Nemkov. So, you know, that light heavyweight division is exciting. To me, a big reason why is Vadim Nemkov is a light heavyweight that has a limitless ceiling. He's a guy who can go out there and literally be the best light heavyweight in the world. Bellator doesn't have the best light heavyweight division due to the lack of quantity of great fighters compared to the UFC. There's great fighters, but just so much less.
Yeah, no, it's look. If I'm Vadim Nemkov, I would want to fight Corey Anderson, because a win over Corey Anderson can really help his case to be called the best light heavyweight in the world. With John Jones no longer being a part of this division. You know, last week on the show we talked about, you know, the fighting future of Anderson Silva, and I said I didn't think Bellator was likely a landing spot potentially for him if he's going to fight outside the UFC. And Scott Coker was asked about Anderson Silva, he said, "quote I have a lot of respect for him. He's definitely one of the greatest fighters in the history of mixed martial arts. I really haven't thought about it, but I think I'm happy with the way our roster is heading and the fighters that we have now. I think that's my statement on that." I think, Daniel, that to me is Scott Coker in a way saying, we're not going to sign Anderson Silva if he becomes available.
Yeah, I think it's really polite of him. I don't think he's shutting the door on it, but I think he's being really polite to a legend, and he's not saying, no, we're not going to sign Anderson because he's past his prime. He's being respectful, and that's kind of Scott's disposition. That's what you really appreciate about Coker. But he's also, to me, he's not shutting the door on it, but he's kind of closing it. And the thought is that they're okay with what they got. The idea of signing him to a contract or on a per-fight deal, I mean, that expense is probably going to be pretty large when he's just, you know, the UFC is literally forcing Anderson Silva to no longer fight, right? Like, when he's at that level, he's probably not worth signing. But if I was Scott Coker, I would still think about it. And as I've mentioned before, the reason being is I do think Anderson's a game changer. Like, I do think Anderson Silva is a guy who is a game changer in that when you put him on television the first two times, he's going to draw an audience, I think. I think. That's my thought. I could be wrong there. That's why I see that he's valuable. But in all likelihood, we're not going to see Anderson in Bellator.
As I said last week on the show, I just think it's a sign that, you know, if you look at how Bellator has been running business over the past couple of months, I just don't think it's going to make sense. Now, the final comment from Scott Coker was on Aaron Pico. Now, the end of the statement is a part of this that stuck out to me, but I want to read the entire statement here where he's asked about Aaron Pico. He says, quote, "Aaron is somebody we had such high hope for, right? We signed him and made a big, big splash. He already had some boxing experience. Sometimes in life, you got to take a step forward and then have to take a step back before you continue your journey forward. That's what happened with Aaron. He had high hopes for him, and we still do. The kid is a young man. I think he's now, 24? We started scouting this guy right as he turned 18. We tried to sign him even before he turned 18. There was a lot of pressure on him right at the beginning. Talking to Aaron last fight, he enjoys these fights with no audience and without the big media presence and fanfare close to the fight. He seems like a very shy kid in a lot of different ways. I think this fits his personality better." The line right there at the end where he's talking about there was a lot of pressure on him, talks about how he was talking to Aaron last fight, how he enjoys fighting with no audience and no big media presence and no fanfare close to the fight. Man, that's a very interesting comment from Scott Coker on Aaron Pico, Daniel.
It's a very big red flag, and it's an interesting thought with the benefit of hindsight to take that in and maybe use that as a reason for some of his lack of success. But it's a red flag in that, you know, Aaron Pico's intention in competing in the sport is to be the champion. spoiler alert, there's a pretty big media presence whenever you're the champion. There's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of people in the stands. So if his goal is to be the best in the world, that's not a good sign that he is a shy guy. And I understand. You know who else is shy? Like 98% of people, right? Like most people. Conor McGregor is probably pretty chill with, you know, all the attention. You know who likes media attention? No one. But that's the cost that comes with competing at a championship level. So for Pico, I think he's competed a lot in his life and he's dealt with so much pressure, but potentially maybe this media landscape is a bit different than everything he's done prior to this. It's just a lot more, even though things he's done in his life before mixed martial arts had attention, this is a very hyper-focused attention coming from all different angles, and it's a very naked process in that he's learning a completely new sport, as we saw that transition. So maybe that's why. But for Aaron Pico, who had the pressure of being a potential champion, this, coming from Coker, adds a little more color to the reason as to why Pico wasn't outrageously successful thus far.
And, of course, Aaron Pico is going to be a part of the preliminary card on Thursday night, Bellator 252, which, Daniel, for me, like, Bellator 252 is a fight card of the weekend. To me, it is much better than the UFC fight card. You know, when the UFC lost Makhachev, that was really that was drawing me. But this Bellator 252 card on Thursday night on the CBS Sports Network, and then, of course, your preliminary card on YouTube, DAZN, and CBS Sports, like, I think it's a phenomenal fight card. And you mentioned before we started doing the show of just how much, you know, these prelims are, how Bellator is definitely giving the fans a reason to watch this fight card. I mean, Aaron Pico taking on John De Jesus at 145 pound. You got Carrie Taylor Melendez. She's taking on Emily King. Carrie did miss weight by 0.2 pounds earlier today, so that fight is still a go. I know I did see yesterday that Melendez did talk about that she was going to move up to 125 pounds. You got a bantamweight matchup of two undefeated guys. Keep an eye out on Jornel Lugo, 4-0. Definitely got to pay attention to there. This card is all about the main card because we have got two quarterfinal matchups in the Featherweight World Grand Prix, as that Grand Prix is rebooting here, of course, after everything has happened this year in terms of what 2020 is. But, man, the co-main event matchup, Yaroslav Amosov and Logan Storley, you talk about Bellator putting on high-level fights. That's a high-level fight.
Yes, it is, man. I tell you what, I think the three best fights of the weekend are on the Bellator card. I mean, maybe Felder Dos Anjos creeps in. It's a top four. But it's those four fights, and then there's a big gap. And that, again, includes the co-main event. Like, Amosov has just been great. Great, great, great for Bellator. He's been getting win after win after win, and the same goes for Logan Storley, and neither of these guys have been rushed quickly, but now, man, both these guys are at just the right temperature, and we got ourselves a good old-fashioned, great, great 170-pound co-main event. So I'm excited for this fight. This fight could be boring, though. That's a real possibility. We could see a lot of positional warfare. In this contest, my pick here is Amosov over Logan Storley. But you look at Amosov-Storley, man, I think that's a banger of a fight in terms of competitiveness and seeing who is the better guy in this landscape. But, I mean, between that, any Pitbull fight to me is must-watch TV. And then Michael Sanchez is the more compelling of the two featherweight fights. So you are right to say that 3-5 Bellator card is vastly superior to the UFC card. So, yeah, I mean, if we're recommending what to watch, it is absolutely that Bellator main card. It's a much smaller dosage of mixed martial arts with much more quality.
I was thinking about this yesterday as I was driving home from the office, and I was thinking about this Bellator card because I really do love this Bellator card. I think it's a great card top to bottom. I mean, look, if you're sitting in your office on Thursday afternoon, prelims start at 3:45 p.m. Eastern time, main card at 7 p.m. Eastern time. But I was thinking about this co-main event, and like, My pick is Amosov to win the fight. I just think that he's a better overall mixed martial artist. I mean, I think the question, you know, look, is story we know about the wrestling credentials that he has, but I think for him to win, it's going to be a fight that likely plays out on the feet. I just like Amosov in that. But I was thinking about it, like, to me, if Amosov wins this fight, I would love to see Amosov versus Michael Page. I just don't know if Michael Page's people would be all in on that fight. Do you think I'm wrong in thinking that?
Well, I think you look at Michael Page's career, it's not unfair for you to assume that, right? This isn't a guy who appears to be making the type of choices where he's just going thrown in there, thrown to the wolves, and Amosov's a real big wolf. I think that's gotta be, if you're in Page's camp, though, it's now or never to continue to take these big time fights. What are you protecting? If he goes out there and loses to Amosov, he's not going to lose his stock. People will still care. And that's a great fight. That really is. I think definitely Amosov's in the A side here. But I do think Storley certainly has spoiler potential in a great path to victory. But I do think Amosov is a very, very exciting 170-pounder. Like, he injects very, very great possible clashes in this weight class. I think Paige Amosov's certainly one of them. But I think if you're Paige's people, you got to encourage him to take that fight. But you're not wrong in assuming that they will not want him to. I mean, they love to coddle this guy.
You know, look, I would love to see, I mean, there's a couple of fights for Michael Page. I'd love to see him versus Lenz Larkin is another one that interests me. I mean, I think that's probably a fight that may interest the people around Michael Page more. But Amosov, I mean, look, he's on that track to get a welterweight title shot in the very near future. But of course, reason number one, reason number two, why you're tuning in on Thursday night or early Thursday evening, or maybe Thursday afternoon, depending maybe if you're on the West Coast, is because of those two featherweight World Grand Prix quarterfinal matchups, Daniel Weichel versus Emmanuel Sanchez, Patricio Pitbull versus Pedro Carvalho. As we do this show, just looking over at bestfightodds.com, Patricio Pitbull, a 7-1 betting favorite. If you want to take the underdog, he is plus 500 in Pedro Carvalho. And then in the other matchup, Daniel Weichel, plus 195, Emmanuel Sanchez -235. And I think what makes that matchup really interesting is that it's a 5-round fight. And, you know, with these two guys potentially going at 5 rounds, I think it does favor Emmanuel Sanchez in this spot. I mean, that's just a great matchup. I think it's a fight that goes back and forth. I would imagine you look for Weichel to try to keep this fight on the feet. Expect Sanchez to try to kind of mix things up, have some strikes, take the fight to the ground. That's a fight that I think likely goes 25 minutes. And, I mean, look, you know, Patricio Pitbull, I like him to win that fight. I think the fight is not as a huge of a gap as the betting odds say it. I mean, I think Patricio Pitbull clearly is, you know, should be the favorite. Should he be a 7-1 betting favorite? I don't know about that one, but I'm all in on both these fights.
Yeah, I am too. You know, the Patricio fight isn't compelling, but Patricio is. He's one of the best fighters in Bellator history. He clearly has his place in the Mount Rushmore of Bellator fighters, and this is his tournament to win. He is the 1A, 1B, 1C favorite.
So I think the road continues. An upset would be huge. It would be shocking. It's possible, but unlikely. The odds are pretty long. Pedro Carvalho isn't a bum. This is a legitimate featherweight, but Patricio to me is going to get that first round finish. I think we could open up that card and we could get 25 minutes of action out of Weichel and Sanchez. I really see that one going all 5 rounds, and I'm kind of on you with you. Excuse me, I'm not on you. That would be probably be Lauren Storley's strategy, but I'm with you. I think Emmanuel Sanchez is going to be on Weichel in terms of stealing rounds. I think Weichel's probably going to have better moments. I could see him dropping Emmanuel. But I think Sanchez is going to steal rounds with clinch work, with grappling, stuff like that, in addition to his stand-up combinations, to win 3 of the 5 rounds. So I think we see Sanchez in the semifinals and Patricio Pitbull in the semifinals of this tournament.
Yeah, and of course, you got Caldwell and McKee. They're going to fight next week. As I mean, obviously, it's great to see this featherweight world grand prix back. But of course, on Saturday we've got UFC Vegas number 14 mentioned. We were supposed to have Islam Makhachev and Rafael Dos Anjos. Unfortunately, Makhachev pulls out of his fight, and Paul Felder comes up, steps up to take this fight. Look, this is a fight card that on paper it doesn't have. It's not a fight card that's going to get a lot of people excited. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a fan base that MMA's on, they want to watch. And I don't blame you. I mean, but this is just, it's not a fight card that gets me uber excited. You know, interested to see what, Paul Felder, who had hinted at retirement. Clearly, that's not the case here. Taking on RDA back at 155 pounds. You know, it's like, as I look at this fight card top to bottom, like the co-main event of Abdul Razik Al-Hassan versus Chaos Williams, you know what? A lot of people tuning in may not be familiar with both of these guys, but like that fight has the recipe for being a very fun, exciting fight to watch. You got Julian Marquez coming back after 2 years on the sidelines, taking on Safarov. You got Kay Hansen versus Corey McKenna. As I want to say Ariel Wani had the tweet that this is the youngest combined age of two UFC fighters. They're both 21 years old. Eric Anders on this card. Brennan Allen, who's supposed to fight last week against Ian Heinisch. Of course, Ian Heinisch with the COVID issue, that fight did not happen. He's now stepping up to take on Sean Strickland. I believe that is at a contract weight of 195 pounds. Alex Morono always tends to put on a fun, exciting fight to watch. He's taking on Ryze McKee, who's getting his second fight in the UFC. You got Jose Quinones versus Luis Smoka. I don't know if Luis Smoka knows how to have a boring fight. This fight card did lose one matchup. Daniel Rodriguez was supposed to take on Brian Barberena. However, Barberena pulled out of the fight. Daniel Rodriguez not getting a new opponent. But, I think that it's not a fight card that gets me excited to sit down on a Saturday afternoon, early Saturday evening to watch these fight cards, because the main card is going to start at 4 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus, and of course the main card will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time. But I mean, look, like the one reason definitely to tune is for the main event of RDA and Paul Felder. Would love, I was really interested to kind of see, how Makhachev would look against RDA. I thought that was going to be a great choice, but I don't blame any MMA fan that says, you know what, I'm going to watch the UFC after the fact just because, this card doesn't intrigue me.
Yeah, out of all the UFC fight nights that we're getting, this is one of the worst ones. The one upside here is the quality of the fight, not so much like the possibility of fight of the night contenders, exciting fights. That's what you like about this fight night card. What you don't like is the lack of relevant fights if you're an MMA fan, in terms of what does this fight mean for the top half of this division. There aren't too many of those. It's a shame that we're not seeing Makhachev. I mean, this was with Nurmagomedov relinquishing his title. The spotlight is now on Makhachev because that's kind of the guy. He's like, hey, it's his turn to grab that title. That, that train will have to stay in the station for a little bit longer. Paul Felder, RDA is the fight. It's the 1, 2, 3 most relevant story of the fight card because there's just a huge drop off after that. It's going to be a fun scrap. I don't know how anyone can watch that Fight Island documentary and not come away from it a major fan of Paul Felder, or at least legitimately interested in him. He just came across like such a good guy, and I'm looking forward to seeing him fight. So he's going up against a former champion in RDA. I think he's probably going to lose, unfortunately. This is a very tough fight, but it's possible he wins. And the reason why I say that is because Rafael Dos Anjos is a fighter who is very, very much like Cinderella, I guess would be my description. Like, sometimes he's got the pumpkin that he's in, and like, I actually don't remember. Was she in a pumpkin before or after time ran out? Like, did it become a pumpkin? The Cinderella? Did you watch Cinderella?
Not in a long time.
All I know is Cinderella was like cleaning some crap, right? And then she was like, hey, I want to go dance with this dude. And then like some fairy godmother came out and he was like, Cinderella, you're Cinderella now. And then she got on like some pumpkin thing and she drove to the dance and then time ran out and then it turned, I don't know what happened. All I'm saying is sometimes Rafael Dos Anjos fights like a world champion and sometimes he fights like he's a pumpkin. And you never know what you're going to get like RDA. He's like a box of chocolate. So sometimes he goes out there and he doesn't perform well. Sometimes he does. You never know. Potentially it could be due to some type of help, you know, in terms of the diet, in terms of something he's putting in his body. Who knows, right? But I think Paul Felder has a possibility to win. Screw it. Gut instinct. Paul Felder picking this fight on short notice. Jason, he's my pick. I think he's going to beat Dos Anjos. I think Dos Anjos got too much worried about, including worrying about cutting back down to 155.
Yeah, I like Paul Felder here. I was actually kind of surprised to see how much of an underdog he is in this fight, plus 160. Like if I was going to label three reasons to watch this card, reason number one would be the main event. I mean, it's a relevant fight at 155 pounds. Reason number two, I would say, would be Kay Hansen. I think that she's someone to see how she develops here in the UFC. And then if I was going to say reason number three, it might be Brandon Allen versus Sean Strickland.
Those are the top three fights, I think. Those are the top three most relevant fights. That's what I would have said. I would have said those three. Like, Kay is the star potential. Allen Strickland's is the fight where it's like both these guys are, you know, going to be players in their divisions going forward. The only one where I would say, like, okay, these two would be the Marquez return and the Razak Al-Hassan Chaos Williams fight. That one could just be a barn burner. So, again, there are some fighters on this card where they are fighting for their careers, I think. Smolka's got to win here against Quinones. And I think Random Marcos especially needs to win against Kanako Murata. So that to me is another storyline I'm looking at, is these fighters who are stalwarts in the UFC continuing to validate their employment within the organization.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the things you have to kind of note, I mean, we've seen it with Dana White's Contender Series this year, is the amount of fighters that they are signing off that show. I mean, they're ultimately going to take the place of somebody on the roster. I mean, you know, pretty much every week we're getting, you know, three, potentially four fighters. I mean, I think the numbers, like, I think heading last night, I want to say maybe they've signed 30 fighters off the Contender Series this year. You know, one fighter that didn't get a contract last night, Danny Sabatello, I mean, had a very dominating performance, but it was a performance where, you know, he used his wrestling and he dominated his opponent. His opponent couldn't get off his back. He got a 15-minute decision, and Dana White basically essentially saying is he just kind of felt that Sabatello wasn't taking any risk. And, like, look, I understand the fans that'll sit there and say, you know what? Yeah, Danish didn't sign him. He did take risks. He didn't get the finish. But, I mean, look, it was a dominating performance. And clearly, Danny is he knows how to sell a fight. He does that very well. And it'll be interesting to kind of see once, because the way these Contender Series contracts work is the UFC has a right to sign you within 30 days of that fight. And once that 30 days is up, you're free. We'll see maybe if the UFC doesn't sign him, that maybe Bellator comes in. But, you know, overall, I enjoyed watching Contender Series last night. But there's plenty of MMA to take in this week. Tonight, Wednesday, if you're listening to us here on Veterans Day, you do have the XFC event, their return, the first time the XFC's holding an event. And I want to say it's 4 years. They're going to have their lightweight and welterweight tournament kick off. Andre Sugrenthaw is in the main event of the fight card. Also, Kurt Hollibutt's on this card, so you can check that out. I do have some coverage up over there at themmareport.com, so I always do appreciate people do check that out. Of course, Bellator on Thursday night. Saturday, we've got UFC Vegas number 14. And then, of course, next week, we got the UFC pay-per-view. The flyweight titles are on the line in the women's and the men's division, so we'll get you ready next week for that here on the show. Daniel, anything else you want to miss before we get out of here?
Let me see. What do I want to mention? I think I'm just going to rub it in your face that Tom Brady scored like 3 points against the Saints. That's it. That's all I got. Just poking fun at you. I'm sorry. You thought you were going straight to the Super Bowl, huh? Well, you hit that pit stop, Jason, so I just want to tease you about that. That's it.
Hey, newsflash. We're only 9 games into the season. We're 6-3, baby. We're still, I mean, look, it's, I get it. You know, the funniest thing about, I just find is like, I go through my Facebook timeline and you know, you get those sponsored posts. Well, can the Boston media stop talking about Tom Brady?
No, no, they can't. They can't, man. I mean, it's like that person at the bar who's like talking about their ex-wife or their ex-girlfriend or the girl they saw one time at a football game and they just can't stop thinking about her. The Boston media will never stop talking about Tom Brady. He was the best they ever had.
It's like a jilted ex-lover, like you just mentioned. It just can't, every time I see it on my timeline, I just shake my head. I'm like, man, guys, just sit there and talk about your own team, not a guy that's playing, you know, way south of where you're located at. But yeah, man, it's you know, fun. It's great to have live sports back, and look forward to talking about everything going on in the world of MMA. Of course, if you ever have a question, comment for the show, various ways you can do that. You can tweet at us. You can leave a comment on the MMAreport.com. You can shoot me an email, jason@themmareport.com. We will talk about whatever you have to say here. Of course, new episodes come out every Wednesday and Sunday. Every Wednesday is myself and Daniel talking about what's going on in the world of MMA. And then the Sunday podcast is the interviews that I have over the course of the week. I will tell you, I talked to Zach Otto yesterday. He is actually going to be fighting next week on the regional scene, and he's going to be at 185 pounds. So talk to him about that. Also, some of the conversations that I've got come up here later on today, talking to Parker Porter, who fights at UFC Vegas number 15 here at the end of the month. Also, talking to Lloyd McKinney, who's going to be talking, who's going to be fighting at LFA 95. So, got a bunch of interviews coming up here on themmareport.com. So, let's go wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can always check out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week on Sitting Ringside, we talk to Mr. Hughes, Curtis Hughes. We talk about his story, his background in playing football, how he broke into the wrestling business, also his rise in WCW at a very unique time in that company, getting to work with Harley Race. Lots of Harley Race stories. We always love those. Also, leaving WCW, going to WWE, working with The Undertaker on top and why that didn't last, and also talk about what he's doing now, which is training some huge stars in the current industry. Be sure to check out this unique conversation wherever podcasts are found.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.